Nearly every commentator I read on this passage points out the irony of the gospel story. Jesus and his disciples are far from home, traveling through the land of Samaria. This is noted because it's a long walk from their normal trekking through Judea. Samaria was not only a good distance from where they normally worked, but it was also the home of a people who were rather looked down upon by the Jews of the time. The Samaritans were the descendants of the old northern kingdom of Israel that was conquered by the Assyrians. They had intermarried with foreigners and practiced a hybrid version of Judaism that was mixed with other religions. They still had the tradition of their ancestors, like the story of Jacob and as well, but had developed their own religious traditions, like worshiping in different places than the Jews. And as is normal with people groups, the greatest enemy is often the one that is closest to us. The author of the story wants to highlight the irony of the encounter. He adds the little parenthetical note that Jews do not share things in common with Samaritans. The fact that they share an ancestor who dug the very well at the center of the story, notwithstanding. The woman herself recognizes the irony of the situation, responding to Jesus, "How is it that you, a Jew, ask a drink of water from me, a woman of Samaria?" Jesus' disciples apparently notice the unexpected nature of the encounter upon their return, but don't dare to say anything out loud. Even we as readers are trained to focus on the differences of these two characters: class, gender, ethnicity, religious purity, and look for meaning in that irony. The only one in the story who seems to see no irony at all here is Jesus himself. Jesus acts as though his situation is perfectly natural. He's thirsty, so he asks the first person he sees with a bucket for a drink from the well. Later in the conversation, even while pointing out her checkered past, he simply says that she's telling the truth because she has no husband, even though she's living with a man and has had a handful of husbands in the past. He doesn't condemn her for it. He knows her past, and he knows that others would expect him to look down on her for it because of who he is. And yet he doesn't seem to care. It seems that he must have done this sort of thing, this expectation shattering, often, because his disciples knew when they walked up that they shouldn't give voice to the things they were all thinking. They even knew when their itinerary changed that they shouldn't say, "Jesus, this isn't really the sort of place that we should stay for 2 extra days. Maybe they were actually starting to get to know Jesus well enough that they realized it was exactly the sort of place they could expect him to stay. As a matter of fact, he tells them that they are actually doing the easy part of someone else's work, reaping what they did not sow. I was reminded this week, as I was reading this passage, of an expectation-shattering documentary that got made right here in Peoria. The former rabbi of the Jewish community in town, the imam from the Islamic Center, and an evangelical pastor of a large church in Peoria became friends. They had a number of conversations that were really about truly caring for one another and engaging each other at a deep level. Through the conversations, they all say they came to know God better. The documentary is called The No Joke Project. You can look it up. It's called that because they recognize that most people would think that their relationship was ironic. They would be waiting for the punchline of the story. But their goal is that such a relationship would cease to be remarkable, that it would become a commonplace, even respected thing. If it is remarkable, it's because these people are actually practicing what all of their religions teach them to do. And that doesn't happen as often as it should. I think sometimes we do things that intentionally reach across the lines of societal norms, whether it be socioeconomic, religious, ethnic, gender identity. We serve with people unlike ourselves, have an amazing dialogue, or find common ground to push for some sort of joint cause. In those moments, it's easy to think, isn't this an amazing thing we're doing? And we pat ourselves on the back. And it seems that Jesus is saying here, not particularly. You're reaping what you didn't sow. That's exactly what I expect from you. It is what Jesus modeled, especially in John's gospel. In the last chapter, he was talking to Nicodemus, a respected teacher of the law. In this, the very next chapter, he's interacting with a nameless Samaritan woman and staying on in her town at her request. He goes between having dinner parties with Pharisees and well-known sinners. Jesus finds value, finds his purpose really, in partnering with all sorts of people who cross his path. One of the questions in our baptismal vows asks us to seek Christ in all persons. In other words, it's asking us to approach every person as though they have Christ in them, as though they are worthy to be considered the Christ, as though they may actually have something to teach us about Christ. It's incredibly difficult to do so long as we think of ourselves and others as having fixed roles along lines of class, religion, or gender. It's hard to seek Christ in someone of another religion if I think, well, I'm the Christian and I should be teaching them about God. It's hard to seek Christ in another person if I think I hold what I perceive as the higher position or have more resources and should always be the one giving rather than asking. Jesus was the Christ, and he was still able to ask this woman for something she had that he needed. Seeking Christ in others takes a profound act of vulnerability. It's admitting that no matter who they are or what station in life they occupy, they may have something to teach us, and they may have something that we desperately need. The Celtic poet David White speaks of the Christian journey as being one of robust vulnerability, where our hearts are open to the gifts of others in a way that allows our connections to become real and truly life-giving. That's what I see in this passage. I actually think one of the beautiful things about this passage is the way that Jesus, in his vulnerability, strikes up a conversation with this woman and asks her to do him a favor, allowing her to literally find the Christ in him. Jesus was vulnerable and open to the gift of another, and it allowed her to be vulnerable in return, and a whole village was changed by that encounter. On our Lenten journey, we need to practice a robust vulnerability. It's how our own thirsty souls can be satisfied. The passage starts by telling us that Jesus was tired by his journey and he was thirsty. So many of us are tired by our life's journey and thirsty for real connection, but somehow we find it difficult to have the vulnerability to reach out to unexpected partners for that connection. This story is asking us to give it another chance, to express your need, to offer what you have, and to be willing to enter into a conversation and let it lead where it may. When you discover Christ in the person you didn't anticipate, and it quenches your parched soul, those are the living waters. If we have promised to seek Christ in all persons, because everyone is made in the image of God, then there are no unexpected places to find Christ, no irony in any connection. There are only places we refuse to show the vulnerability to look, and we miss Christ every day for it. This season, let us be open and looking for Christ everywhere, that we may find him risen and near at hand, living among us in all sorts of people. Amen.